This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joy 94.9 presents Absolutely Everybody, sponsored by and presented by Anecto, the People Network. Absolutely Everybody, only on Joy 94.9.
In the studio today, we have three very special guests. Jodie, you should have seen her before. One of her first questions was, is there going to be a fourth little special guest?
I know, I'm a bit sad. I thought I was going to get a cuddle today, but anyway.
Sorry, it's okay, we can share the love between us.
Yes, I know, you can be covered in a cuddle, Trevor. Not so, the same though.
Today, and we have, and I'm just going in order of where they're sitting, we have Amanda, Michael and Terry, who are here today to talk about their journey into parenthood and aspects of that and everything in between, as Amy was saying at the start.
Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Amanda, you're allowed to talk.
Thank you.
Is that fear when you first get on radio? Is like, this thing that's in front of me, what is it? How close do I have to get? Is it going to implode? Am I auditioning for Australian Idol? All that sort of stuff.
Yes.
So it can be quite daunting.
Sweat on my brow.
Yeah. All good. I suppose for today, you know, and this is a very topical and timely discussion, the focus is around surrogacy and people's journey to have a child. And, you know, I know Michael going back a number of years and we lost contact there for a bit. So the first, you know, I heard was probably after we reconnected after about 4 years and you went, oh, by the way, this is what I've done. And it was like, wow, right. And I had all these questions in my mind and all these probably inappropriate questions to find out and how it all worked. And you were really open about that. And and thankfully, Terry's here as well to talk about his experience. And I think that's some of the stuff that we want to go through today. So again, you know, we've had lots of questions in. If we get to the point where we're asking too personal, feel free to hand up, what do they call in soccer, the little timeout?
Yeah. Give us a red card.
A red card? Yeah. Oh, sorry. Here we go.
Give us a red card and say, I'm not comfortable answering that question. Yeah. And that's fine. Cool.
And I think that's that whole notion about, you know, this is a very personal experience, a very fantastic and very happy one, and we want to try and hear some of your stories around that. So let's start right at the beginning.
Okay? Where did you meet?
There weren't apps then.
No.
Gay.com.
Okay. So even that, like, how long have you been together?
Nearly 11 years.
11 wow. years. That's fantastic. Yep.
We met in Melbourne. So I moved down to Melbourne in 2003 and we met soon after that.
Yep.
And have been together that whole time.
Fantastic.
And Terry tells the story about the discussion about Harper better than I do, but we started the discussion around about 3-4 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, so even before Harper is our 11-week-old baby.
There we go. Perfect.
Beautiful.
Yep.
And tell us about that journey. So you'd been together for 11 years. Yeah. When did you start realising that you wanted to be parents?
Well, I think it sits in your mind for a while, but you think, oh, we can't do that. So you just let it go. You just kind of go on with your life and you know, just do normal things.
Yep.
I think from my perspective, as a 20-something, I never wanted children and never thought... I think I never actively wanted kids. And as I watched my siblings have children and Terry's sister and her 4 beautiful children, you kind of develop that desire. And Amanda has 2 beautiful girls, so you then start to develop that desire, that want.
Mm.
And it was certainly after a few years that we had started talking about it. But that feeling was known to me, certainly after about 4 or 5 years, that would be something that I would love to have as part of the relationship.
And you both sort of came to that conclusion at the same time?
Well,
that
he came home from Queensland at his grandfather's funeral, and he'd spent a few days with his nieces and nephews, and he comes home and goes, so are we having a kid or what? I'm like, sure.
Did you say,
ready.
I'm not ready yet.
And then, so
I need to sow my wild seeds.
We kind of thought, well, how are we going to do this? And that's when Michael started looking into surrogacy and found out that it was legal in Victoria now.
Mm.
And that's how we started the journey.
And you said it was legal since 2010?
Yes, I think it was like May 2010. Yeah, it was
the legislation was 2008 created, but 2010 enacted,
mm-hmm.
and has been in place. So it's being used by straight couples, it's being used by lesbian couples, but it's not been used yet by gay male couples.
Really? So you're the first?
Yeah.
Yes, in Victoria, but people confuse that with, like, my cousin did this, though, and they are, but their surrogate's always been in Queensland or New South Wales. And we may not have been the first human beings in Victoria, but we're the first gay couple in Victoria.
Yeah.
To have a Victorian you know,
a fully Victorian conceived child.
So taking it back, just so then you decided that you wanted to become parents. Can you take us a little bit through the journey of how you researched and what conclusions you came to?
Sure. I'll probably enter this one because I did most of the research.
Sorry.
Don't worry, I'm the researcher in my relationship.
I knew that overseas was an option, but I really wanted Australian domestic. And knowing nothing at all, I just started going to VARTA, the website, Victorian Assisted Reproductive Technologies Association or something like that. They are like a support mechanism group with information. And so they were a good place to find out that Mel IVF and Monash IVF were available. And their websites talked a lot about domestic surrogacy. And that's where they made it clear that it was possible. So I contacted VARTA, and VARTA weren't overly, you know, detailed to begin with, but they put me in contact with Melbourne IVF, which we used. And they then gave a lot more detail. So it was really quite easy to get information about how the process operated or how it was structured. But the devil was in the detail as to what all the steps were. But it was actually relatively easy to find out that it was legally possible and what the result was. So one of the reasons we really wanted to pursue Victorian was the ultimate process, which we're doing very soon, which is changing the birth certificate for Harper so that we're listed as parent one and parent two on her replaced birth certificate.
Yes.
So that's actually the final piece of excitement in the process.
That is fantastic.
And that's unique to Victoria. Mm. So when parents go overseas, they of course adopt in. When they go in other states, they don't change the birth certificate, so we're really privileged to have that law down here, and it's something that I really love about the Victorian law.
But also it was because our offer was homegrown. Amanda is from Melbourne, so it's like perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And our egg donor, exactly the same. We're all very close, and it's just been one amazing journey.
So can we just, from that, sure, then, and Amanda, please feel free to weigh in. We have Amanda with us in the studio, who's very good friends with Michael and Terry. What did it happen quickly? Did you sort of let friends know what you were doing and then you got these offers, or what happened?
No, we just discussed with our close friends that, you know, this is what we want to do. We didn't drive it anywhere. We just said, this is what we want to do. And then that's when Amanda offered.
Yeah, so Brent, my husband, and I came home from a night at Michael and Terry's and having dinner, and we kind of just sat there and said, you know what, you know, let's be a surrogate for them. And we were really nervous that they would say no. So,
Oh my God.
So we kind of thought about it for a little while, and then we thought, oh gosh, how do we offer, and how do we make them feel comfortable to say no? And, you know, we were really nervous about it, and nervous that they would kind of say no,
and
make sure.
Can I say something here? Surrogates get a bum rap in terms of sometimes the depiction of what they. Amanda is actually stunning. And, you know, she's actually gorgeous, and she's got the whole package going. I just thought I'd say that because, don't you think? You know,
I suppose it's that whole thing about people's perceptions.
Yes. You know,
absolutely.
So we just kind of thought, you know, what an amazing gift to be able to give them. We've got two little girls ourselves. And we kind of thought, well, gosh, the boys can't have a baby themselves, and so and we can, and you know, so, and the process for us had been relatively easy, so we thought, gosh, you know, let's offer and kind of make that, give that gift to the guys, and yeah, so that's how it started.
So how did you feel emotionally carrying Harper?
Yeah.
Did you feel a connection with her, or?
Not really.
Yeah.
It sounds kind of weird, but the pregnancies for me, I hadn't kind of felt massively connected with the babies, even with my own. So
yeah.
We had
that discussion before about bonding and how it takes.
Yeah. So, and they'd been relatively easy for me as well. So, no, I didn't have any connection with her as such as like a baby. It was kind of like a friend that you hung out with for 9 months, which was really perfect because, you know, if you had a really strong connection, that would be really difficult. So, yeah, so I kind of carried her around like she's your friend that you can't kind of get away from.
Definitely.
But not in a bad way either. So it was kind of not a massive bond, but it was certainly not an awful experience either. It was an amazing experience.
So tell us about the birth.
Wow.
Who was
there? It's...
Okay, well, he was squeezing my hand and I was looking out the window into the park and she was screaming. And
that's... Sounds like birth, doesn't it?
Beautiful.
The birth were, like, we were amazingly blessed to be able to be in the room, in the suite. It was different to what I expected. I think I had this amazing image of it, just like a harmonious rainbow and just like
in Priscilla.
Yeah. I'm assuming you had a vaginal birth. Yes. Yeah.
And so it was stressful, obviously, mostly for Amanda, but stressful for us in knowing the pain that she was going through and just the enormous emotions that go through at that point. But it was amazing to have, you know, Harper delivered and then handed straight over and just to be right there. Yeah, so that was a beautiful part of the process.
Everything that annoys you about the whole process, like it's taken years with counselling and psychiatrists and you name it to make sure we're the right type of head case to be a parent. And it all just went away the second she was born.
Yeah.
The second it was just gone. It didn't matter anymore.
Yeah.
How slow.
Yeah. The process sort of handing Harper to the boys was really amazing for Brent, for my husband. So he really wanted to, you know, that's kind of the only bit that he wanted to do in the whole sort of process. And he was really, you know, really kind of strong about that. So it was fabulous that the guys could kind of, you know, stick in the room until the end so that they could do that as well. Yeah.
This is the first time on the show I've actually felt a bit teary. So I'm feeling all... Oh, it just sounds such a beautiful moment. If you've got anything you'd like to ask or anything you want to bring to the table or just email us in, it's SMS 0427JOY949 or onair@joy.org.au.
No, I'm amazed that we're talking and we haven't even played a song.
No, I know, because, you know, they can wait. The songs can wait. Okay. This is a great conversation.
Okay, let's go back to the topic then.
Sure.
So I suppose it's for me, it's that whole thing about how did you negotiate that? Like you said before that you were a bit worried that they might say no.
So we were worried that the boys might say no or that they might want someone else to do it for them. I suppose we felt really privileged to be able to do it and to be kind of chosen to do it for them. So that was the process. And then we went and saw Michael and Terry and I think we were very nervous to say, you know, we'd love to do this for you and you can choose someone else if you want to, but, you know, the offer is there. And then the boys said, yes, you know, that would be amazing. And we started out and I think after that process we tried to find an egg donor post that conversation.
Yes,
sure. So, Terry, what was it like for, you know, Amanda and Brent to come and go, we'll do this for you?
Oh, I was drunk because we were at a wedding.
Right.
So a normal day, really. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh, my God. So it was a little bit overwhelming, a little bit exciting. And the next day I'm like, oh, my goodness. You know, this is real.
Was it almost that sense of awkwardness going, okay, we said it when we had a couple of wines in us. Is this true? Like, how do you then go back and confirm and go, do you know what this really means?
Well, you're right. There was definitely, because Amanda had had a couple that night too. and so there was a bit of it which was, you know, is this like an exciting football kind of offer? But so we just had to go back and had a chat, and it was a more deep and meaningful chat. And we didn't know very much at that point anyway.
Sure.
So we knew that it was a process of discovery, but we knew that it was a fully involved activity. So we got to talk through some of those aspects and appreciate that it was a genuine offer. And, you know, Harper is our series of miracles and blessings where we've just been really lucky to have this many people participate in her coming into the world and to her being part of her family.
This is Absolutely Everybody on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Enecto.
It is 12:32 and you are on Joy 94.9, Absolutely Everybody. Before the break, we were chatting with Amanda, Michael and Terry about surrogacy and their journey to become parenthood and just some of the, I don't know, I suppose the exciting parts about it all. I'm not sure if the boys are aware of it, but they probably are. But every time we mention little Harper's name, you both beam. Like, it's really happy to see.
Yep. She's so cute.
She's adorable.
Yeah.
She
is amazing.
She just laughs all the time.
Yeah.
It's great.
Beautiful. So you get lots of cuddles.
So you said she's 12 weeks old?
11
weeks old. Okay. Yep. Spoken like a true parent there. It's that whole 11 weeks, five.
Yesterday.
Yep.
And 32 minutes.
32 minutes. So in terms of the practicalities, what was it like welcoming a newborn into your house and that first night after the hospital?
Well, fortunately, the hospital that we chose has an outpatient an outpatient program where we stayed at the Hyatt here in Melbourne mm-hmm. for 3 nights.
Yep.
And they have a floor for new parents and a nursing ward down the end for the 24/7 nurse on duty. And the interesting bit of that, of course, is that it's all mothers who are staying there. And that's part of their paradigm is supporting new mothers.
Sure.
And that was interesting.
They were very high strung. We would go down to the nursing station at midnight and they were all trying to breastfeed and it's not happening and they're screaming. And we're like, we're fine. We're just going to go back to our room.
She just took 20 mils. It's all good. She's got to sleep.
Well, can I tell you, when I had my second, they offered me the Hyatt and I said, no thanks. I'm staying here where I've got the nursery where I can hand the baby over. I can stay at the Hyatt any time.
But it was really good having the nurse. I felt having the nurse there because I was really nervous. The first night, I obviously didn't sleep. That whole fear of wanting to hear them and everything and that desire to just bring her over and have her sleep with you. But I found that it was actually quite a natural progression moving her into the house and it felt just normal. It feels like now, and it felt really quickly like she'd always been there and that she always had a place there, which is really strange. I don't think I would adapt that quickly.
Even like with our dogs, they're like, hey, there's a new queen in town, and they sort of stayed clear.
Yeah.
They sussed her out a little bit, but they've, you know, they just respect her boundary for some reason. It's unusual.
Yeah. But, you know, we had obviously, fortunately, having all this time to prepare, the house was very well prepared for her nursery and for upstairs, for our bedroom. So she's got zones in the house and zones at our office.
Right.
That are prepared for her to stay with.
Yep.
So wherever she goes, you know, it's been adapted ready for her. But it just feels like she's always been there, which is really strange.
So you bonded fairly quickly by the sounds of it. Yeah.
I think I texted you this because Amanda went to New Zealand after Harper was born, and I was just lying in at home, I think, on the first week, and I was just sitting there and she was in bed with us and I was just like holding her hand or something and I had a little cry. I'm not an emotional person.
They kind of do that to you though.
Amanda was emotional and we were texting and I just sent back a response to her. It was just so amazing how quickly they grab into your soul and they just connect to you. It's just something that I had not planned for.
Yeah.
That whole crying stuff, you know, for some people may know or may not know that I've gone through the whole permanent care process, which is completely different from your guys' experience. We had a week from notification to our little son being placed in our life. But the whole thing about he's 7 and I cry all the time. And, you know, Code will say, you know, oh, Dad, I did this. And I go, oh, yeah, mate, I saw you do that. And guess what I did? And Code will go, you cried. I went, yeah, I did cry. And I would have actually thought that I was the non-emotional one before Code came into my life. But we were chatting, Jody and I were chatting before about that emotional connection stuff. Like you said, it was almost instant for you two or for you three.
Also for Michael, I take a little bit longer to get to like people. Mm-hmm. No, but just, you know, to work each other out. And I took a little bit longer. But now I just like look at my phone if I'm not there and I'm like, aw. You know.
So taking a step back then through the, I mean, obviously surrogacy is a topical thing at the moment in the media, and it's possibly got some bad publicity recently because of some events that have been happening overseas. In terms of the process, how did you find the process and what were some of the hurdles? You mentioned that you did actually look at going overseas at one point.
Yes.
Yeah.
So talk us through that, yeah.
Well, we want to have 2 children, and having Amanda do this for us at home, we thought, well, what are we going to do now to sort of start our family quicker? We'll try with Thailand. So I went over there for a little visit, and we would have started this about 3 or 4 months ago, but I was like, well, do you know what? We don't want to have 2 kids, you know, under 14 months, like scary. So after I met him, we decided we might just hold back a little bit, and I'm glad we did, because we could be stuck.
I guess in relation to the Australian process, it was I found it really I found the legislation, while clunky and while obviously designed to protect certain things, relatively useful. I found the systems quite poorly designed. They weren't designed around us, and they were certainly, because they had not been using gay male couples, they were ill prepared. So I thought they really were very keen and very, very positive, but there were a lot of things that they didn't either think to plan. So there was no woman involved, especially no one who had children, so that a lot of things that they probably should have said that they didn't say. And there were steps that I think they could have been more clear about that. They didn't let us know at the beginning. So my feedback to them along the way, and I gave a fair bit of feedback, was you just need to be more more communicative with us and let us know more things.
Yeah, because you said, Terry, that they actually didn't let you know that it was legal in the actual workshop or initial workshop. There was some information that they didn't raise awareness of, which was that you could actually have a surrogate in Melbourne.
The conference, the IVF conference that they had, they didn't, we knew people that went to it, and they said they didn't actually even mention surrogacy in Melbourne for gay couples. It wasn't even discussed, and I thought that was a bit odd.
So they were sort of not implying that you didn't have to go overseas, you could actually.
And this is the thing, like one of the reasons we're happy to talk about this is the awareness raising.
People don't know.
We had a wonderful experience, and we were blessed that Amanda and Mel offered what they offered to us, and we'll never be able to replicate a gift of that magnitude. But the people exist who are willing to offer those gifts to their friends. And the joy of being able to watch Harper here while Amanda was pregnant was just, you know, incomparable.
Is that part of the bonding process, do you think, or not?
It certainly helped me. Like, I would have been far more stressed if we had to travel back and forward regularly to see the surrogate. I would have been distressed if I wasn't confident that she was healthy and being well treated and being looked after, because of course, you know, her health is really critical to the process as well. And if you're not right there, you just don't know. I mean, I'm lucky, we're really close, so I saw Amanda all the time, and you know, there were goods and bads and all that, and you're seeing how Harper's being quite a drain at the time, and you know, being quite emotional on Amanda, but you get to see that and you get to understand a little bit. Sorry, and all the appointments, yes.
I was very concerned with Thailand about, I didn't want the women there to be treated sort of like battery hens, and I'm not saying they are or they aren't, and I wouldn't read anyone to filth for doing this and having babies as a result of going over there, but it just, to me, it just felt a little like something didn't feel right just to me personally. Like I couldn't get that confident answer that these women are taken good care of. It didn't feel right. I felt like someone else was sacrificing and couldn't really help in any way other than just deliver a baby for us. I felt that was a little selfish.
But Amanda, if hadn't come along, you probably would have had to have gone down that path.
Absolutely. I just would have had to suck it up a bit more and do it. Like, I completely understand it.
The thing that I've found really interesting through this process is we've caused all these conversations, and I've been surprised by, one, the amazing polarity of women who've said, either I could donate an egg or I could be a surrogate. Mm. They've never, ever been able to do both in their mind, or who couldn't do either. But the number of women in our lives who said, I could have done that for you if that was my time of life or if whatever it's going to be. And we've made them think about this. And what's obvious to me is that the discussion is always, is it Thailand? Is it India? Is it the UK? Is it the US? It's never, can it be Australia? And this is I guess, to Terry's point around that conference, it's not being talked about, so women in Australia aren't therefore thinking about it. And it may only be one in 10,000 women who would be able and willing to do that, but that's a huge number of women who would be willing to offer. And if there were people like us who were looking to have a child and therefore looking for a woman who might say, I could offer you that, I could offer that for you, if the discussion's not happening, the offer can never be made.
Basically, we'll have you back in a moment to finish off, because I know Trevor's got some more questions for you. Yep. But if you've got any questions or you'd like to contribute to the conversation, I think Trevor's got a couple of questions from people. SMS us on 0427 JOY 949 or email onair@joy.org.au. This is Hertz Miracle. The time is 90 minutes to one. You're on JOY 94.9.
Absolutely everybody, every Wednesday from noon on JOY 94.9.
And it is 12:46. You are on Joy 94.9. Absolutely everybody. We were so intrigued with the conversation off air, we nearly missed our comeback song and track. Yes. So the discussions, as always, continue on even when the music is playing. We were chatting on the break. Amy, you've got a question you would like to throw?
I do. Earlier, Michael, you said that the process from when Amanda offered this amazing opportunity to getting Harper 11 weeks ago. How long did that process take, and what kind of things were involved during that process?
It was 4 years end to end, or 4.5, I think it was. So it was a long process. It was 2010, wasn't it? 2011.
Yeah, 41 months.
Wow. And the kinds of steps, what we found was there's a lot of waiting in the process. So because we didn't know the things we needed to do, we spent a lot of time waiting to be told the next thing to do and doing that thing. And then once that was done, they'd tell us the next thing to do. And it's actually, it all flows relatively smoothly. Like when you look at it from the future, looking back, it actually makes sense, the things that they get us to do, if possibly a bit of overkill.
Sure.
But if you set yourself out at the beginning to do them all, they would take much less. So I would have thought, you would think the process could be done in 2 years end to end. It's still a more involved mm-hmm. process than the overseas process. I was very surprised that when Tez did the trip over to Thailand at how easy it was going to be after we'd just gone through our process here in Victoria. But there's a lot of aspects of this role process of here that I really like, that protect the interests of Harper, and everything they do is about protecting Harper's best interests, to be fair, and that's you know, beneficial and to be applauded.
Oh, absolutely. So do you think that the process will now improve for couples in the future?
I think the only way it'll improve is by people understanding it better. So as I said, alluded to earlier, we would happily talk with couples who are doing or looking at this process to help them navigate through more efficiently. The feedback we gave to IVF was that you need to provide better run sheets or better process flows or better documentation to say these are the things you need to do, so prep now. And even to the quarantining point that Terry has talked about is, you know, let us know about the quarantining, we'll do that, but while we do everything else, let us know about counselling, we'll start that now, we'll start our police check process, we'll do all those things that take time while other things are happening. And
you get excited, like, and then find out, oh, now you've got to go and, you know, you've got to go into the specimen room and do your thing, and then that's 6 months. We would have been chop onto that 5 months before if we hadn't known it was going to delay. You know, you just, that information.
And they have the information, but it's not put to you in a way that makes sense at the time, because at the point in time when you're starting the process, you're thinking about the end point, but you should be focusing on the next 6 months. And that bit they didn't quite get right, I think.
So rather than someone guiding you through the process, you weren't really guided through until you got to the next step.
Yeah.
Which then delayed it further.
Yes. It was very much a step three, now I'll show you step four. You've done step four, you can do step five now. Ah, now you can do step six. And that was really a little bit, it was very broken up. And, you know, we have busy lives. We will work, obviously. Sure. Sorry.
No, I was just going to ask Amanda, where were you while all this process was happening? So did you sort of go through it with the guys?
Yeah. So there's loads of steps that you've got to do together, counselling and psychometric testing and 300 questions. Terry and I thought we'd fail. But we found out that we were scared of snakes.
Yeah, and interesting. They said Michael was boring.
I believe it was Michael was perfect.
Same.
Well, it takes all sorts to make the world of domestic happening here on the night. Yeah, so did you, and did that take a lot of your time? So, you know, you were talking about people offering to be surrogates. Like, you know, does it take a lot out of your life in terms of just leading up to it, not so much the pregnancy, but...
Yeah, there's quite a number of appointments. So as Michael said, if you knew in advance, that would kind of fit better. You could kind of work around, because you're working around doctors' timetables as well as your own. So it's a juggling act to kind of bring all that together in a really kind of efficient way. So, yeah, there's a number of appointments, but it's not massive. You don't need to take a part-time job or anything.
So is there a place or an organisation where couples can actually go and find out how to begin this process?
Well, for a start, you're not allowed to advertise to be a surrogate, so this is the message. If you're going to do it, just do it. Like, that awareness has to be out there that you can do this for your friends, because you cannot advertise for this. At all.
That's interesting.
Yes.
You can advertise for an egg donor.
Yes.
But it's a very prescribed process, and only one way to do it in Melbourne, to advertise for an egg donor. To your question, I think there are some forums. I don't think there's a formal group as mm-hmm. such. And I think we've talked informally about whether we might either contribute or add information into a forum area to encourage those people who are considering it to actually, you know, go forward with the domestic option rather than an overseas option. But I think
they do need to change the way it works. It is bit silly.
If you're interested to find out more about this, drop us a line, 0427JOY949, or email us onair@joy.org.au, and we'll put some information up on our Absolute Everybody Radio Facebook page. We'll be back in a moment to say goodbye to everyone. We're just going to stop for a quick break.
This is Absolutely Everybody on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Anecto.
And you're back on Absolutely Everybody on Joy 94.9. Trevor.
Sorry, Amy, to cut you off then. We just had an email that flashed up, but I've dealt with that one. That's cool. One of the things I'm just really curious to find out, and I suppose this is a question towards Amanda, how did your friends perceive this? Like, how did the lady in the supermarket go from you've got a baby and now it's not there? Like, yeah, what was that like?
Yeah, there's been a few really interesting incidents across the time. I think because the whole process took such a long time, there were just a few people that we kind of told that we were thinking about it or going through the process and not yet approved. One of the first people that I told really reacted quite badly.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and so that was really interesting for me. So I thought, oh gosh, you know, maybe I can't tell too many people for a while, so yep. I sort of kind of went quiet on it for a little while. But you know, once you kind of start getting more comfortable with it and talking more broadly, people are just amazed and want to, you know, talk on for hours about it and ask loads of questions, which is really beautiful and encouraging, I think, for people to be able to have that forum just to talk about it. Yep. You know, my family have been amazing, you know, mixed kind of responses. So one of my family members were not as keen as the others, but overall, you know, fabulous support around that. In the supermarket, definitely it took me a long time to kind of get used to what to say, and particularly when Michael and Terry were around a little bit as well, because at the start, you know, random people will get excited that you're having a baby. They've got no idea that you're having a baby for someone else. So I kind of used to sort of say, you know, oh, thanks. And if there was someone that I didn't know, I'd just kind of move on and say thanks. And then if it's someone that you kind of knew, obviously you needed to tell them that it's not my baby to keep and all of that sort of thing, which caused loads of more conversation. So it took quite a while to move around because once you'd start to say you're a surrogate, then they had loads of questions to follow.
Do you think they judged you in that process?
I think some people kind of were shocked to start with, and then I suppose what happens for them is they get all these questions and just start kind of blurting them out at you, no matter what they were. So you've got some crazy kind of questions.
Yeah.
I think some people certainly do. You get all types. Yeah.
Because I know that, the last time I caught up with Mike, we had this discussion about almost becoming public property. And we found that with our son, people felt they had the right to ask questions that you wouldn't ask a heterosexual couple.
Definitely.
Yeah. And
definitely.
So you've experienced some of that as well?
Yeah. All sorts of questions.
Yeah, we have. And I'm happy about that because it means that you're pumping them with some knowledge.
Yep.
You know, bit of brain power. And that's a ripple effect of that. Like, we have had not one unsupportive person. Everyone's been amazing with us. It's been incredible. We're so lucky.
Yep.
And I think that's true about we're hearing so much about it at the moment, but people, it's a typical repercussion of media coverage, is that people get an issue but they don't actually delve into the good stories get to know the people involved. Whereas, you know, when you tell your story, people say, well, here's a couple that wanted a child and they've had their baby and they love her to bits. Mm. You know, it's...
Well, it doesn't feel like the stalk brought her in this way.
No.
You know? We've just been there for the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
So what's it like walking down the street? It's just wonderful.
I get a lot of attention, as much as I used to get on my own merit, but
you know, they're magnets.
Certainly, and we've got a mini dash hound as well, so it gets everyone looking. I love it.
But I just love having her there.
Right.
Yeah. It's just she's just beautiful to look at, and when she smiles, it's just amazing.
Yeah, she's pretty cool.
Mm. And what would you say to people who are knockers? Like the people who do make those judgments, like, you know, you said part of this role is educating.
Wow. We had really that event blah. We went to, the polo thing, and there was an interesting conversation.
Oh, we did.
Terry
too.
Forgot he was a little bit drunk that day. But
he was an idiot, that guy. He just really was anti everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it started from a negativity around, you know, two guys shouldn't raise a child, and then it got to a bit of homophobia. But it was really interesting that, you know, he just started from the perspective of, actually, sorry, he started with, IVF wasn't appropriate. Then he moved on to the gay bit, and his girlfriend sort of took some umbrage at that point.
Oh, yeah. I think that was quite funny. Ended since then. She realised what he was really like.
But that was really full on because he had really strong opinions. Mm. But you know, I'm very happy to bat that back. I'm more than happy to talk with someone who has a different opinion to mine and to argue my case naturally.
Yeah. Love and patience.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the things that we keep on talking about is so many people don't know this is there. So the more people who have the conversation and feel comfortable with it, the more people can realise that this is normal. It's just everyday processes that just take a little bit longer to sort our way through.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, guys, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It's been an absolute delight. It's been one of my favourite interviews, I think, from the whole of our time on Absolutely Everybody.
So, absolutely.
I'm looking at Trevor. He's looking stunned.
It was. I suppose is that how do we say or how do we wrap this up? There are so many questions that we want to cover, and you know we've only looked at surrogacy. We haven't even looked at permanent care or adoption.
Oh, we're happy to come back. Oh, we'll come back. For
yeah, we'd
two.
Love to have
sure.
you back. Love to have you back.
We might bring Brent this time. Sorry about it.
Yeah. Yes, so we
he's
get to hear Brent. Hi, Brent.
He's also a huge part of the process.
Oh, who was that? Sorry,
Our
Donor
Mel.
Oh, hi, Mel.
Harper. Brent
and Harper. Harper. Hi, Harper.
To bears or something. Oh, yes. And his
how to.
I have to say, if yes, this will be podcast, so you can definitely hear the interview or share it with your friends who are interested in the subject on Joy. Go to their Absolutely Everybody page, and all of our podcasts are on there, so you'll be able to listen to this. So it's been great to be with everyone today. Thanks again, Michael, Terry and Amanda.
And for your honesty.
And thank you, Trevor and Amy. It's been fun having the A-team back together again. Yeah, we'll have to do it again soon.
Long overdue.
Indeed.
Yeah, well, the time, and it's 1 minute to one. And, yeah, thanks, and have a great week, everyone. We look forward to hearing and seeing you again. Well, not seeing you.
Hearing from you
again next week. Bit of tongue twister happening today. So, yeah, stay tuned. You're on Joy 94.9.
Made in Melbourne for Australia and the world.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.